this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody, we're live.
This is a live stream. It's a rare live stream of our Y'allitics podcast.
Have we ever
podcast.
Done it?
Yeah, we've done this once before.
We've done the live stream before?
I think okay. We have.
I think last
the
time.
Last election.
So, last election.
Yeah. So
they all run together.
It is late on election night on Super Tuesday night. Wheeler looks like he's the one who lost a race tonight.
Before
we went on, I had to fix his tie a little bit. It was like shoved over to the side. But wow, there's a lot going on tonight that we did not anticipate. We're going to get into that. But I don't know why all the beer's on my side.
Well, because nobody wanted it, because this is stale beer.
I don't know if it's stale, but it's
and
old.
And it's lukewarm, I just noticed. It's old, stale beer, because we got these when we were in McAllen, and we went down there debate between Governor Abbott and Beto O'Rourke when he was running for governor. That was 2022. So this is now almost two-year-old beer.
All right. Let's introduce our panel tonight. We have with us Bernadine Steptoe, political producer at WFAA in Dallas. And we have Michael McCardle making his debut on Y'allitics. He's the political...
Long-time listener.
First-time caller?
Yeah. But he's always behind the scenes.
Yes. Political coordinating producer at WFAA in Dallas. So you guys already have your own beers. What are you drinking, Bernadine? Soda water, or are you going to have that Bock?
Sparkling.
How about you, Michael?
Storm the Beaches by Southern Star.
That fits for tonight, I think.
It does. Like, if this is old, stale beer, it kind of feels like the election tonight. It was like, yeah. Was there a lot going on or what? It was just kind of the same.
Too many surprises.
What are you having, Whiteley?
I'm having the Spindle Tap Proper Pilsner. This is from, it's from Houston.
I'll tell
it's
you what.
713, man.
I'll tell you what, the play on words there is fitting for tonight, too, because that's, of course, referring to Spindle Top, which wasn't that Beaumont?
It was Beaumont.
Okay, so and we're going to be talking about Beaumont. And I'm having a foobar, by the way.
That one's most appropriate, I think. Yeah.
What does that mean again, Jason? Yeah, I think our boss is listening, but what does that mean?
I'll let you decide the FU then the beyond all recognition. I think that may be the best. Description for what we saw tonight. So the races that I thought were going to go into a runoff did not go into a runoff.
Yeah.
I thought the Congressional District 26, one of the three open seats in North Texas, the race to replace Michael Burgess, I thought that would go into a runoff. It did not. Brandon Gill, way ahead in that race. He's going to win that one outright.
Surprisingly ahead. Like way, way ahead.
Yeah. He's the MAGA candidate in that race, supported and endorsed by Donald Trump. And then the other race that I thought would go into a runoff, and
he vociferously challenged with the 2020 results too, and didn't believe that they were legitimate.
Yeah, that's a good point. The election denier.
And in addition to the endorsements, he had a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it not only came from the money that he raised, but you had PACs. And it's so interesting as well, because on television, the television ads, they were for and against him.
Yep.
They painted him like this evil
person.
Yeah,
they did.
But he's winning without a runoff.
And it looks like he's going to Congress. And the other big race that I thought would go into a runoff is Congressional District
32
in Dallas.
Yeah.
The race to replace Colin Allred in Congress. Ten candidates in there, and Julie Johnson and Brian Williams were the two who are, front runners.
Yeah.
And they still are, but Julie Johnson is ahead with a little over 50% of the vote.
Just edging over. A lot of people don't keep up. Well, first of all, most people in Texas don't vote in primaries.
Right.
Okay. It's like a 10-11% turnout if you're lucky. And so a lot of people probably don't even keep up with the fact that you've got to hit 50% in your race to avoid a runoff election. Mm-hmm. And then even fewer people vote in those runoff elections. This one will be in May, right after Memorial Day, which everybody's going to be thinking about going and voting, right?
Right.
So the turnout there is going to be minuscule for these ones that are going to run off.
Let's talk about the biggest surprises of the night. Bernadine, we'll start with you.
Oh, my goodness, a Speaker Dade Phelan.
Yeah.
That was such a surprise that he's going into a runoff now.
And you're taking us to Beaumont with this, as we were talking about earlier, because that's where his district is, in the Beaumont, Port Arthur, Orange County area there. I'm sorry. I had to bring all that back around,
We will go to Beaumont.
Wheeler hasn't been drinking yet either. So. Well, go ahead, Bernadine.
No, but that was such a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one, I think that one of our analysts earlier said that he, Bud Kennedy said that he expected a runoff, but I don't think that too many people did.
Yeah.
And it was so close.
Yeah,
it was so close.
And he came in the upside down part of that runoff. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, if you're going to a runoff with another person, it's not hugely significant, you know, if you came in a percentage point or two below them, usually.
Right.
But does it, you know, have a little bit of some symbolic or you know, just any significance that you're the Speaker of the House, one of the most powerful leaders in the state, and the people in your district have decided that, you know, you're going to go to a runoff, number one, and you're the lesser vote getter out of the two people going to runoff.
But you know, and he was targeted.
Yeah.
He was so targeted, and
a lot of money spent.
And they saw the voucher.
Yep.
The impeachment.
Yep.
Tax credit. All those three issues were piled on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was blamed for it because he is the Speaker. We'll just see how. I think that, remember, in runoffs, you're going to have low voter turnout as well, but yeah, it's also going to depend on who can get their voters to the poll.
Right.
And if you have good structure, if you're able to spend the money, which both of them are,
yeah,
and you're going to see so much influence and PACs and everyone else coming in to get their candidate over the as a winner, but that's going to be very interesting. Because
Does he win?
Well, you know what?
Does Phelan win?
I know who you're asking. But let me tell you why I'm hesitating. Since the thinking was that he would win, I'm not real sure about the structure. If his grassroots is as powerful as the opponent's, that's what's going to determine, and it should be. But I always say that those candidates or those representatives who don't have competitive races, then they're not trained to campaign. They're not trained to ward off these opponents.
Mm, yeah.
And sometimes those opponents who fight hard to win, they can overcome them. But see, he has not had an opponent.
And Michael, there was a third person in this race that we haven't even talked about, Alicia Davis, mm-hmm, which I don't think, you know, many people had her on their election night bingo card either. And she pulled 9% of the vote, more than 2,000 votes. I mean, the other two, you know, had, you know, 14, 15, 16,000 votes. In that kind of scenario, more than 2,000 votes is significant. And she's a challenger to Phelan too. And so, you know, that doesn't necessarily bode well for him either, that those people who supported her chose not to support him.
Right. So the thinking goes that her votes would go to his opponent, of course, because they would have chose, you know, voted for Speaker Phelan if they wanted to support him. And at the end of the day, it's a losing situation for the Speaker either way, right? Because even if he were to win, he's going back in a weakened position.
Yeah.
It was just not a good night overall for Phelan, even though he's talking about a runoff. It's just he's going to go back to Austin, if he does, even now in a weaker position than before.
So you say even if he ekes out the win, does he get elected Speaker again?
It's a good no. I mean, who would vote for him now? Some of his lieutenants and all of that won their races tonight.
Yeah.
So that could give him some more strength. But no, I mean, if you're the Speaker of the House who hasn't lost in, what'd you say earlier, 60 years?
Yeah.
No. I mean, he's in a runoff now, fight for his life. When he gets back into Austin, what kind of power would he have? It doesn't look like he'd be elected Speaker again. You know, it's bad night.
Whiteley, does that mean vouchers? Does that mean vouchers?
No, I think we're easily a lot closer to the passage of vouchers when we look at the number of Republicans who Abbott supported who won tonight.
And then
if you have the Speaker, if he does not win in a runoff, and who knows which way that one's going to go, I think the headline tonight, if you're looking at Super Tuesday 2024 in Texas, Texas was lurching farther to the right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well,
yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, you spoke about Abbott, you know, endorsing challengers to Republican incumbents. There were something like, I think, 21 Republicans who, you know, in the House who voted to strip out school vouchers, which was the governor's huge priority this last legislative session. He didn't oppose all 21 because some of those, quote unquote, retired before we even got to this election because they saw the writing on the wall. Others, for whatever reason, he spared. But I was tracking it, and of the 10 that the governor came out directly and put his support behind the challenger, it looks like, and again, these are numbers that are still in flux tonight, but late into the evening, it looks like the governor was able to pick off five of those incumbents, perhaps, if these numbers hold, that three others would likely go to runoff, and that two of those 10 incumbents look like they're safely making it back onto November.
Well, still the odds. I mean, you know, huge night for Abbott here.
Mm-hmm. Big.
If Abbott is getting 80%, if he got 50% wins and he got another 30% that he has in runoffs.
Well, he should. He paid good money for it.
They're celebrating tonight, yeah.
And the endorsements went a long way. I mean, you can look
at the
lists where Paxton and Abbott got involved. Of course, you know, Paxton was for the impeachment.
Yeah.
Abbott was for the vouchers.
Right.
And the candidates that, voted to impeach but were in favor of vouchers, you know, are doing well. So they had Abbott's endorsement because they were backed vouchers, but Paxton went for an opponent and it just didn't work out in a lot of those races. So Abbott had a real good night tonight. Yeah.
In talking about those Paxton grudge matches, he took on almost three dozen House members who were Republicans trying to take out the incumbent because he obviously didn't like the impeachment vote that did not go his way in the House last year. His results were a lot more mixed. It looked late. Again, you know, these votes are still being counted. These are not final numbers. It looked like he may have picked off about nine of those three dozen or so that he targeted. Another eight looking like they're going to a runoff late into the evening, not the final word. But it looks like 19 of the incumbents may have survived him.
That's so significant.
Yeah, that is significant. And it kind of tracks with what people had said. I think it was in the UT, Austin.
Texas Politics.
I can never remember their name. It's a lot. It was their poll that found that people were, on the Republican side, were much more likely primary voters to listen to a Trump endorsement, and then much further down, an Abbott endorsement, and then almost
Paxton
endorsement. Yeah, and that seems to be borne out there.
And you know what, I think about Abbott, because not only did he put the money in these races, he actually campaigned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He went into their districts, and I think that had he put this kind of effort during the session, and actually courting the representatives and compromising in a sense, he would have gotten what he wanted.
Yeah.
He just didn't have the interest to do that. And instead, through all those special sessions, he just decided he'd just get rid of the state representatives. Mm.
Let's zoom back out and look at the state of the Republican Party in Texas now after Super Tuesday. Dade Phelan, who represents the more traditionalist Reagan Republican wing of the party, I would say, he's in jeopardy. Morgan Meyer is one of the lieutenants for Phelan. He's a representative from Dallas, from Highland Park and North Dallas. He's ahead by 2 percentage points. Of course, we talked a lot about how he's always has close races. Jeff Leach is another lieutenant who was a House manager who prosecuted the case against Ken Paxton.
Very targeted, too, for that.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, he won big.
He ran away with it.
Two-thirds of the vote.
I wouldn't put Morgan in this scenario because that district is in Dallas County. So the mere fact that he wins is a testament to him. Hmm. And he's in Highland Park, which is not doesn't necessarily consider itself in Dallas County.
It's its own enclave.
Let's talk about two other races.
You're just talking about two. HD2 is an example of that.
Yeah. Which is
Brent Money
and Jill Dutton.
So they had the special election in January, and Jill Dutton won. So she got to put the I by her name, incumbent.
Yep.
And then here we are a month later.
That didn't last long.
Nope. And it looks like Money's going to win, and he, of course, is backed, by the Abbott and Paxton.
Yeah.
And then Phelan backed Jill Dutton and Phelan's allies. So that's another example of this.
So many factions now to keep track of in the Republican Party in Texas.
Yeah, it really is. The infighting is really incredible this time in the list. I think we'll be talking about the list for a while.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen, y'all have been covering politics for a while. Have you ever seen, a governor, attorney general, come after people like this before
in
such a coordinated effort?
I mean,
it's unprecedented.
But it's going to reflect the Congress.
Yeah.
See, this is what's going on in Congress, and it's just trickling down into the state.
Well, and it will trickle down possibly into the Texas House, too, because things have traditionally been done differently than what you see in Washington. And Jason, you know this, Dade Phelan took a lot of heat this time around as Speaker of the House, as a Republican, for still going along with this tradition of letting Democrats be the chairs of some committees, even though they were not in the majority. He took a lot of heat for that and the other things that we've talked about. Does that change if he loses the speakership now? Do you see more of this scorched earth policy going forward if somebody else gets that speakership and the House in Texas has moved further to the right? Do they say, no more of that tradition, we're done
Absolutely.
With that?
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's the size of the Republican, which is large now, because remember, if it's so fractured that you would need Democrats even to win, because no one could get the majority of any Republicans.
I
think the difference is, even if you get a far right person in that position, I think that you're going to have trouble getting that person elected.
Yeah, because
in the Texas House,
because the Democrats have a lot of sway, and because of the Republican Party is so divided. Mm-hmm. They're not going to come together to elect a speaker.
Let's talk about two other races that we haven't really touched on much. These are Republicans who are either in trouble or who may have lost their races. The first one is, both of these are going to runoff. Frederick Frazier is an incumbent in Collin County. He was targeted by Ken Paxton. He is behind Carissa Richardson as we record this, with 96% of the vote in, and Frazier is going to a runoff trying to defend his seat. You look over in Rockwall County in North Texas, and you also see Justin Holland. He's going into a runoff. He's behind Katrina Pearson, who's a former Trump administration official. Texas lurching further to the right. Will these Reagan Republicans eventually go away? Will they retire out? What happens to them, Bernadine?
Well, and then what is even more interesting is these candidates who are winning, who are far right, they're non-compromising. They don't compromise.
Right.
It's either their way, and they're the Tea Party representatives. So
I don't think Tea Party. I mean, I would call it more MAGA. I call it more MAGA than Tea Party.
Well, you're absolutely right, but they started as Tea Party.
Right.
But you're absolutely right in that sense. But it's going to be almost like D.C. in the sense nothing is going to get done.
And you're right. D.C. is going to be coming to the Texas legislature.
If nothing is going to get done.
Which is phenomenal. Let's talk about a few other races here. Let's go to Houston and talk about Harris County. Sheila Jackson Lee. This race is interesting to me because you have Sheila Jackson Lee, a former city councilwoman there in Houston. She is a longtime member of the U.S. Congress. She walks away from her seat to go run for mayor. She loses the runoff to John Whitmire, and on the very last day, you could go in and file to run for re-election to Congress. She does that.
She pivoted fast.
She did fast, and she won overwhelmingly against her former employee, Amanda Edwards.
Yeah, there was a lot of hand-wringing, too, in those last days before, you know, March 5th. You heard a lot of hand-wringing, like, oh, she may not be able to pull this out.
Jason Wheeler.
I love to say Wheeler, not Wheeler.
Wait a minute. That was from those who were not in that district.
Yep.
Because I had a friend who was here who was in her district. She told me she's going to win. She's an institution. We like her.
Yeah.
She ran for mayor, and she just could not win citywide, but they loved her. And then while she was off running for mayor, the Edwards was campaigning and raising money.
Yeah.
But she didn't need the money.
Right, because she had the name recognition for sure.
Well, then, go ahead.
Was that just now the equivalent of the last election when you threw down the line of the night? Was that the equivalent of that? When you said, Jason Whiteley, that is not how politics work.
Well, you know
Right. She keeps me in line. Of course, the other big the other big race in Harris County is the district attorney's race down there.
Michael, you were looking at that a few minutes ago, and you said the numbers, and we're like, no, like refresh that. Like that's got. It's, I mean, it was huge.
Yeah, she's in the 20% range right now as the sitting DA.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she's a Democrat, and what, over the last couple of years, she's kind of flirted with Republicans on a couple of different issues.
Yeah.
And Democrats
ran afoul of
strongly
the
rejected
county judge,
county
too.
Yep.
Hidalgo.
Yep. Yeah. 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 So those are the two big headlines, I think, from Harris County.
Yeah.
And then let me come back to Dallas County for a moment here. There are two big races here that I think are worth talking about. Number one, Dallas County Sheriff's race. This is an incumbent sheriff going against the former sheriff. And Bernadine, I'm kind of, I don't want to say I'm surprised, but I thought Marion Brown might maintain.
As of now.
50% plus, but this is going to a runoff. Marion Brown versus Lupe Valdez, who wants her old job back. You say never write out Lupe Valdez.
I've never seen a candidate like Lupe Valdez.
Why?
Never, ever,
ever. Explain that.
Because those who run those who run campaigns consider her as not being a very good candidate, not being a very campaigner.
Yeah.
But she gets votes. She gets votes. And I think it is a surprise because Marion Brown is a good sheriff. But she just came up against. She amazes me a little bit. I will never count her out. Never count out Lupe Valdez.
Who wins that race? Who wins, Lupe Valdez or Marion Brown? Who wins that race?
I think Marion Brown will go ahead and pull it off, only because she's going to have the entire Democratic establishment to come in to help her.
More structure.
Yeah.
And, more structure. And Mike, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West has defeated Jennifer Studdard-Hoidu to be the chairman of the Dallas County Republican Party. Numbers weren't even close here. He strongly took that one.
Yeah, big blowout. You know, he was on Inside Texas Politics a few weeks ago, talking about a lot of the changes he wanted to make, get better candidates to run for offices, et cetera. And clearly it resonated with the GOP there in Dallas County. I mean, he's got the name recognition for sure.
Former member of Congress from Florida.
He's
former
run,
chairman of the Texas, Republican Party of Texas. And here he is now running. And Bernadine, you know, I think I asked him, and I've asked you too, why would you go from a member of Congress to run the you know, party, Republican Party in the largest Republican state? I get that. But then to go down to a county seat in a Democratic county, he says he didn't see it on this very stage where we are right now. Mm-hmm. He didn't see it as a step down.
I've always said that in my career when I've taken a step down, though. I've always said, it's not a step down.
And he says that I want to serve. I just think he wants something to do.
Yeah.
He just needs something to do.
Well, he said the people recruited him, right?
Yes,
they asked me to run.
And you know what? And the people might have. Mm-hmm. Because it was the establishment, Republicans, if there are any. But I'm just saying because, you know, many of your statewide officials didn't want him, although it was Dallas County, mm-hmm. because they he just rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah.
But he wins, other than governor. But he wins, you know, because the grassroots like him.
Yeah,
he stands
like
for them.
So it's totally expected tonight that, you know, the incumbent, Joe Biden, would, you know, run away with it because it's not really a contested primary.
Did he win? I didn't realize that. Are the numbers in?
This just in. So like 85%, you know. So that wasn't unexpected. I usually, when you don't have a contested primary like that necessarily, and you've got an incumbent like this, you'll see a tapering off in turnout for that party. You know, so that's not unusual. I don't think that probably the Biden camp is too worried, maybe necessarily, about Democratic turnout in this primary, because there weren't a lot of races necessarily to excite Democratic voters. I think maybe you would be a little worried about this, though. Even if you had a great night and you're Colin Allred, why didn't that Senate race between, you know, two, you know, well-known politicians in their part of the state, you know, anyway, why didn't that draw more Democrats out to vote in this primary?
Who wants that one?
I'm just trying to figure out where you're going with this because the man got over 80-some% of the vote.
He did.
In Texas now.
Yeah, but you're going to need more come November because, you know, you're up against Ted Cruz, and he is considered one of the more vulnerable Republican senators up for re-election this time across the country. But it's still, you know, a red state, and, you know, he's an incumbent. I mean, you're going to need.
You're going to need that top ticket, but
yeah.
they're probably looking at Colin Allred. Now, and also to be the top drawer, but Biden, he's just now gearing up.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not sure that he would get, that he could pull, it's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, in November, it will change.
I am curious, if you're calling Allred, do you see at this point if you can get endorsements from Red and Rufus?
Well, I want to talk about this. So, tell our listeners about this right here.
Red Gibson and Rufus Lopez were on the Republican ballot with Ted Cruz. Okay, everybody knew that Ted Cruz was going to, you know, win this in a walk-off. And he did. You know, he got almost 90% of the vote here. But Red and Rufus combined got more than 200,000 votes. I don't know if other people have heard of Red and Rufus, but I haven't heard of them.
Huge numbers.
That's a big number. So, you know, again, maybe these people are known. Maybe they have great social media presence, and I just, you know, I'm not on that or whatever. But, or is that a protest vote? Are those Republicans who are showing up who want to vote the ballot, but who go, you know what, I don't want Cruz, though? Yeah. And do they come back around to Cruz, though, in November if it's Cruz and Allred? Or do they sit out that race in November? That's just an interesting dynamic to me.
Yes.
That's 200,000 plus votes.
But Cruz.
For somebody that people, you know, who are they? It sounds like one of these beers we're drinking.
Red and Rufus.
Is somebody
that being said, it looks anyway, as of now, that Senator Cruz, strangely, got more votes than former President Trump, at least what I'm looking at here. And again, these numbers are changing. They're coming in still. But are you checking my work?
Yeah. Wait, say that again? You said Rufus and Red what?
No, not Rufus and Red. Cruz. So Cruz, you know, at 1.648 million, as we're talking, Trump, and Trump at 1.55 million. Now, of course, you know, he had Nikki Haley to contend with in this again. I will say that former President Trump sort of hit that number because, you know, there have been criticisms coming into this in other primaries that he has underperformed the polls leading into the election in those primaries. In this one, it seemed like some of those late polls were saying anywhere from 75 to 85% of the vote is what he was expected to get on the Republican side. And, you know, what I'm looking at right now, and again, this is in flux, but it's at 78. So that's fitting into there. But, you know, she pulled in 17% with 337,000 votes as it stands right now. That's not a small chunk of votes. Where do those votes go in November? You know, it's not like she has this clear path to nomination. So people who showed up and voted for Nikki Haley, these 300,000 plus Texans, do they come around in November and say, okay, I'll go with Trump, you know? Do they sit out? Do they not, you know, decide to vote in that race? And then in third place on that ticket was uncommitted.
Yeah,
that's a protest vote, perhaps 40,000 people.
And I think it's interesting that Trump didn't just receive that amount in Texas. Mm. You would think that he would hit almost the 90%.
Yeah.
This is red Texas.
So what does that say then, Bernadine? He's underperforming.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. There's been some criticism of the criticism coming into tonight too, where people are like, this too much is being made of this, you know, Trump underperforming what the polls were saying. Wait until he, you know, takes part in some primaries in quote unquote closed primaries, where you're a registered Republican and you have to vote in the Republican primary. Well, you know, there were several of those tonight, and a couple of them border us almost. So Colorado is one that's a semi-closed. In that one, Trump walked away, you know, as I'm seeing it right now, those votes still being counted too, but 63% to her 33%.
In Colorado.
So now you're not talking about a bunch of Democrats and independents maybe flooding in and changing those numbers in her favor. Is that, does that ring an alarm bell for his campaign? And then Oklahoma is another one. And in that one, let's see. Let me pull up that Oklahoma number because it was interesting.
Very red state.
Here it is. Yeah, the red state to say the least. Yeah. In Oklahoma, he was at 82%. She was at 16%. And that is a huge margin, no doubt. But it is less than what those polls lately have been saying. They were expecting a bigger blowout by Trump, by, you know, maybe 6% more, 5% more, that sort of thing. And Maine, same thing, another closed, semi-closed primary. He pulls 71% as it stands right now to her 26%. And again, that's less than what those polls coming into the night were saying, and it's by that same little margin there, 5-6%. So And, you know, 5 and 6% is not a small number. That's what he won by in Texas in 2020.
In the last election.
Does that keep 5.5%? Does all that keep her in the race longer?
That's what I
think it does.
That's the question. Yeah. So she wins Vermont on Super Tuesday. She won Vermont. She's won D.C. She's gotten, you know, whether he underperforms or not, she's gotten destroyed everywhere else. How much longer do donors keep giving her money?
And where do her voters go if she eventually does drop out? Or just gets beaten for the nomination, where do those voters go? Do they come around? A lot of times Republicans do. But
and I think that that's what Republicans are concerned about, because if, you know, I always talk about all this fighting and infighting, it can suppress the vote.
Yeah.
And the Republicans that cannot have low turnout, because that's going to allow Biden or whoever else to sort of squeeze in. Because
but Biden's going to have to excite his voters too, though. Okay, and there's an enthusiasm concern there.
They don't have to be excited as long as they don't want for Trump to get in. But Republicans ought to be concerned, because he's not in red state Texas, all those other states that you named, fine and dandy. But this is Texas. And he could not hit 80-90% in Texas.
The biggest Republican state in the country.
Yes, yeah. That's solid red, that's moving far right.
With a lot of electoral votes, too. Right. Yeah, you're right. You know, we did see that statewide shift in those races.
But not towards him.
Can I make one more point?
Yes.
Am I talking too much?
Go ahead, bro. I'm going to sleep over here.
You allow us to respond.
I'm enjoying my beer.
Yeah. Okay, so, and I promise, this is, I think, my final
is
one.
Is this the last thing?
Yeah, I think it was my final takeaway, although I usually have three or four last things when it's all said and done.
Now, those are good points,
though. So, when I was looking at this Paxton revenge thing, okay, one of the things that really stands out to me is his real push to pick off three members of the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals.
Yeah, this is a good point.
Including the presiding judge, okay? These are people who've been around. For those of you who don't know, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals is the top court in Texas for criminal cases. So if you get a criminal conviction in Texas and you go, I'm gonna fight that all the way, well, you're not gonna go to the Texas Supreme Court unless it's a civil case. If it's a criminal case, the top court is the Court of Criminal Appeals, okay? It's got 9 judges on it. It's all Republican, has been for a while. There are some Democratic candidates for these seats that we're talking about here for places 1, 7, and 8. Those three were up for re-election here. Paxton zeroed in on them and targeted those three incumbents because they made a ruling a couple of years ago that he didn't like that said that you can't, as the Attorney General, just go in and start investigating voter fraud in different places around the state without going through the local officials there. Okay, you can't just do it on your own. He did not like that ruling, so he, you know, put himself into those races and really pushed their challengers. And as we speak, those challengers are far ahead of the three incumbents. In some cases, I mean, it's like runaway. And so that's really interesting, and it's something to watch going forward. Don't forget, Ken Paxton, his securities fraud trial, finally, after how many years? 9 years, something like that, finally starts in Houston, scheduled anyway, next month, okay? What happens if he gets a conviction in that trial and he wants to appeal? And now you end up before the Court of Criminal Appeals, it's going to be a timing thing. If those three judges are still on that court because the election's not till November, what happens? What is that dynamic like? Does the appeal make it there in time? How long is this trial going to go? Do they try to drag it out? I think that's going to be a fascinating aspect of that trial that we're going to have to keep a close eye on. And I'm not saying that any judge would rule a certain way or not based upon did you, you know, go after me with a challenger. I'm just saying that's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing we're watching in the U.S. Supreme Court now, too, with, you know, what people are thinking about Trump's appointees with the immunity case, with the Colorado ballot decision they just made the other day. I think that's a fair question. I guess the last thing I'd be curious to know from you guys is what kind of headline would you put on Super Tuesday in Texas? Mike, gonna go?
Yeah, well, it's... You know, it's like what Mr. Emmert said earlier in our coverage. How do you beat a Republican in Texas? It's not going to be a Democrat. It's you go farther to the right. So I think we've seen that a lot tonight. I also think a big headline that we haven't talked much about, but you know, Congressman Allred winning outright by such a large margin has to help him going into November, right? How soon does he reach out to Senator Gutierrez and try to coalesce his support around, you know, when does all that fall into place? The earlier the better, obviously. But that's a big, I think, surprise for many people. They thought, certainly Senator Gutierrez thought it would go to a runoff, and it didn't. So that's a big headline to me, too. Does that give them a chance in November? Most people say no. Certainly our experts don't think so, Mr. Emmett among them. But it's got to help not to have to go to a runoff, saving money, you know, pushing that money and attention to November. So I think that's a big headline, too.
Bernadine? Mm-hmm.
The Speaker of the House falls. That would be my headline. Because
he hasn't fallen yet.
Well, he did.
I think he's damaged pretty badly right
you
now.
You said my headline. See,
she's going to get to that in the story. Yeah. She's got to draw you in with that headline.
The headline draws you in. Because he did fall now. He just didn't lose the headline. And then you can talk about everything else that falls up under it. Because the Speaker of the House, because of what he did overseeing that House, that's big news. That now he is in a runoff.
Yeah, he loses even if he wins again. He's losing even if he wins.
100%, yeah. And I think mine, just kind of zooming out here, once again, Governor Abbott has shown he's the guy in charge. He's the big winner tonight. He has, he defeated five incumbents. That's kind of what we're looking at now.
That's what it looks like.
He has three going into runoffs. He targeted 10. I mean, look at that. 80% of the people he went after are either in runoffs or they have fallen.
Did the VP short list get even shorter tonight?
It makes you wonder. I'm not convinced that he would be a VP pick, but it could be.
It just shows that in the state of Texas, if you have enough money.
And he does.
Then you can sway election.
Yeah.
Your headline?
I think my headline would be still so many questions. You know, it doesn't solve anything. You end the night with what looks like a lot of runoffs that are still going to have to play out to let us know, okay, does this Speaker of the House go forward still? Do vouchers go forward still? It's going to depend on some of these runoffs. Does Trump have what he needs here? Because, you know, we had, you know, this, you know, Nikki Haley, you know, still pulling in a fair amount of support, you know, and uncommitted and all of that. Does Ted Cruz really need to worry about Colin Allred in a presidential election year in a ruby red state, or what has been one anyway? Because, you know, Red and Rufus, you know, they pulled in 200,000 plus votes. And you got Colin Allred, who outperformed what any of the polls were saying and has a lot of money on hand. There's still so many questions going forward tonight, even after the voters spoke.
Well, and some of those runoffs you're talking about, the candidates will be up late tonight, right? Because a lot of those we're watching, it's like 50.2.
Yeah.
And then it'll dip down to 49, you know.
Yeah.
So they've got to wait and see if they went outright or they'll be up late. And we watched 5-6 races kind of dip up and under that 50% mark all night.
Now, don't forget, whenever we see a Democrat sort of looking as if that Democrat can win statewide, what we always hear is Texas turning blue.
No,
it doesn't look like it tonight.
That's what we're going to hear as well. Now, it's not going to be my headline.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Now Colin Allred's going to try to change that narrative, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think we're now, based on the House races and the incumbents who lost tonight and the ones who are going to a runoff, I think we are a lot closer to school vouchers in this state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to getting school vouchers when the legislature returns in January.
I think you're right.
That's probably the tangible takeaway from this.
Now keep in mind that Abbott can still call a special session.
Yeah,
but there are.
He's still got the same people
he can
in there
call
though.
It.
Yeah, the new people aren't in there yet. I mean, he could call it, you're right. But
No, he could scare people. Well, you're absolutely right on that.
Yeah, they might fight him even harder now.
Yeah.
I will say, I'll finish with this.
Right.
The last, I said there's a lot of questions remaining. One question did get answered tonight, and it's because it's been a long night, but a lukewarm FUBAR is not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
We have a lot of beer left over, too. And
next election, it'll only be, 4 years old? Or no, November, that's not that far away. They'll be 2 years old at that point.
A solid two. Yeah, we could keep them.
How was yours, Michael? Good?
That's all right. I think you've had this one before, because I think you've said the same thing that I'm thinking, and it's very salty. salty and limey. It's a salt and lime
that
lager.
That kind of sounds good right now.
And it's like very salty and limey. So it wasn't bad.
We bought these at the HEB in
1980.
In McAllen.
In McAllen,
which I still say has maybe the best taco game in Texas, McAllen, Texas.
That's pretty strong.
It is amazingly
good.
I'll
give you that.
Well, all this means is we got to take Yolitics on the road in November,
well,
right?
Well, I think
that's
we're
good idea.
Maybe
why don't you
doing
put it together
that
for us?
Okay.
On it. Yeah, we're on it. Thanks so much for staying up late tonight with us. If you're watching the stream, we appreciate that. And
I just realized I look really live fat stream here. I'm sitting down in the chair the wrong way. I would realize that at the very end.
We didn't want to say anything about weird.
Gosh, I would have sucked that in the whole time.
or the fact, you probably can't see it.
We didn't even change cameras. It was on you the whole time.
Right. Wheeler's shoes have been off the entire time, too, so it's a good thing you can
smell. I stood all night.
You can't smell this podcast as well. So.
These are clean.
Nevertheless, thanks so much for listening, for watching, if you're watching the live stream in the hours after Super Tuesday. This is the election hangover edition of Vote 2024. Second time we've done this, I believe, right?
And I think we do feel hungover.
Yeah.
And maybe you do, too, now after listening to this whole thing or watching it. But thanks for doing it.